Bé, bona tarda a tothom. Benvinguts a aquesta nova edició dels debats d'educació, els que ens esteu acompanyant en aquest auditori, però també els que ho feu a través de video streaming. Abans de començar, com sempre, hem de donar les gràcies al MACBA pel suport en aquesta iniciativa que ens permet comptar amb aquest magnífic auditori que ens facilita a més l'enregistrament. Per tant, gràcies una vegada més. També l'agraïment a la col·laboració de l'obra social de la Caixa. Debats d'educació, com molts de vosaltres sabeu, és una iniciativa de la Fundació Jaume Bofill i també dels Estudis de Psicologia i Ciències de l'Educació de la Universitat Oberta de Catalunya. Debats d'educació té com a objectiu principal proporcionar un espai per al debat obert a la participació de la ciutadania en un sentit ample i també de la comunitat educativa en el seu sentit més extens. Aquest és un espai que, de fet, s'adreça als actors socioeconòmics i de la cultura del nostre país. El debat d'avui segurament ens proporcionarà una nova oportunitat per detenir-nos en aquesta concepció de la corresponsabilitat necessària en l'àmbit de l'educació. Debats d'educació pretén sensibilitzar davant els desafiaments del present, però també contribuir a identificar els reptes de fons que ens han de permetre avançar cap a l'educació del futur. I amb aquest propòsit, el debat d'educació procura fer atenció a iniciatives del nostre entorn més proper, però també el que pretén és apropar el contrast, i això podríem dir que sobretot, d'experiències rellevants en l'àmbit de l'educació que podem identificar en el context internacional. Amb aquesta intenció, el passat mes d'abril vam intentar trobar algunes respostes a la qüestió de com connectar el mercat tecnològic educatiu amb els docents per tal que la innovació sigui útil i arribi a l'aula. Vam poder fer aquest debat aprofitant l'experiència de Steven Hodas com a exdirector executiu de l'Oficina d'Innovació de la ciutat de Nova York. Com sempre, tot aquest material el trobareu a la web de Debats d'Educació per als que no hi vau poder, els que no vàgiu poder assistir-hi. Més enllà d'això, de fet, una de les qüestions de fons d'aquest darrer debat, que era el repte que suposa en una societat xarxa com la nostra la concepció de l'educació com a espai de corresponsabilitat i d'implicació efectiva dels diferents actors socials, ens porta també aquesta qüestió de fons ens apropa també al tema que volem tractar avui. El que farem serà aproximar-nos a l'experiència de la ciutat de Pittsburgh, una ciutat que treballa activament per implicar tots els seus agents socials en el disseny de nous espais i oportunitats educatives en el marc d'un model conegut com a aprenentatge connectat. Per apropar-nos a aquesta experiència tan rellevant per nosaltres, tenim la sort de poder comptar amb la Sunana Chan, responsable de l'estratègia d'innovació per l'aprenentatge en el moviment Remake Learning, que ha tingut un paper capdalt, creiem, en el procés que ha fet aquesta ciutat. Serà l'Ismael Palacín, el director de la Fundació Jaume Bofill, qui us presentarà la nostra convidada d'avui. Ismael.
Moltes gràcies. Crec que no l'he espatllat. Gràcies. Thanks. Ha començat una mica accidentat, però espero que sigui a la darrera incidència. Bé, moltes tardes, moltes gràcies per ser aquí. Moltes gràcies, com deia el Josep Maria, a tots els que ens esteu seguint per l'streaming. Molt breument situaré el debat d'avui i us situaré la nostra convidada. que ja us avanço que serà interessant, compromesa, aplicada i amb molts coms, no només amb molts quès. Precisament, en el tema d'innovació educativa, cada vegada ens interessa més no només que ens diguin o que ens ajudin a veure o entreveure on estan els reptes futurs de l'educació i com seran els nous escenaris, sinó cada vegada ens interessa més els coms, el com es fa això. És a dir, aquelles experiències que no només han imaginat diguem, aquesta nova realitat educativa, sinó que han fet una prova agosarada d'implementació, que han après dels errors i dels encerts, que l'han provat en un terreny real, que han trobat les contradiccions, que han trobat les oportunitats i que, per tant, ens poden ajudar a entendre com promoure realment aquest canvi. Perquè podem dir que una part importantíssima del món educatiu aquí a tot el món ja està convençuda de les necessitats d'aquests canvis, d'aquestes oportunitats, i, en canvi, veiem un gran desequilibri i un abisme entre allò que veiem que és necessari i les metodologies i les plataformes i les solucions i les pràctiques que ens estan oferint per portar-ho a terme. És a dir, el coneixement clau avui dia en gran mesura està en el com. El debat d'avui és molt important perquè entronca amb tres o quatre reptes seriosos que fa anys que parlem. El primer, i de fet fa uns anys va venir el Cristóbal Cobo aquí en els debats d'educació, amb el que es diu, ell deia, l'aprenentatge invisible, l'aprenentatge distribuït. És a dir, sabem, ja reconeix tothom, que hi ha un potencial d'aprenentatge distribuït a les institucions socials, a les comunitats, a les persones, a la xarxa, que supera en molt, no només en quantitat, sinó fins i tot en qualitat i en autenticitat, l'aprenentatge clàssic que estava dipositat en llibres, en plataformes o en mestres i que es distribuïa en dosis a les aules lectives i que s'avaluava mitjans uns exàmens estandarditzats. Aquell segueix existint, però sabem que gran part d'allò valuós que han après sempre els alumnes, però que cada vegada està més valorat que aprenen, es troba a les seves experiències 24 hores al dia, 7 dies a la setmana, 365 dies a l'any. A les experiències d'aprenentatge, sinó només en els llocs on aquest està dipositat. Però que tot aquest aprenentatge estigui en aquests llocs no vol dir que sigui efectiu, no vol dir que sigui coherent, no vol dir que acabi esdevenint valuós per cada alumne i, en definitiva, no vol dir que estigui disponible. Està potencialment disponible. I els alumnes, sens dubte, aprenen. Però això no vol dir que aprenguin diguem, d'una forma sistemàtica, que generin coneixement i aprenentatge sistemàtic, que és el que ens interessa. El segon gran repte és tota la trajectòria que especialment el nostre país hi ha en el món del lleure i de la comunitat. L'educació en el lleure ha estat forta, ha proveït de, no només de valors i d'experiències i de creixement personal i vital, sinó de competències claus per la vida, per la ciutadania, per l'amistat i per la feina, a moltíssims estudiants, juntament amb experiències comunitàries de valor educatiu, i aquest mai ha acabat de ser valoritzat, diguem, en el currículum formal o extraformal. Sempre és un intangible que allà està. Juntament amb l'emergència de tot el que podíem dir el mercat d'activitats extraescolars, alemany, música, codificació informàtica, que cada vegada està en increment en el nostre país. És una despesa molt significativa per les famílies que poden pagar-la, no pas per les que no poden parlar, per tant, és una nova front de desigualtat i que tampoc treba aquest encaix. No? De fet, no hi ha ni una transparència a l'hora d'escollir i saber qui hi ha, quin valor té i com encaixa amb els altres aprenentatges. I, en tercer lloc, el paradigma de la personalització de l'aprenentatge. Si alguna tendència és forta en educació des de fa uns anys, és defensar doncs, aquest repte en dir els alumnes, no? El futur de l'educació està en un aprenentatge personalitzat, guiat pels interessos i motivacions dels alumnes, diguem, que són capaços de desenvolupar aquell coneixement distribuït i fer-se el seu, apropiar-se'l i fer-lo créixer, i que en definitiva és la promesa que ens porta a superar el paradigma de l'aprenentatge estandarditzat, centrant només en unes poques coses del currículum i estàndard, i per tant desaprofitador de molts dels potencials. Ara, hem de reconèixer que en aprenentatge personalitzat hi ha més retòrica que no pas pràctica. Hi ha més visió que no pas solucions. algunes de les solucions, en realitat, com diu César Coll, no són de personalitzat, són d'aprenentatge individualitzat. Són aquests programes informàtics o aplicacions que prometen monitoritzar l'alumne, però que és un paradigma totalment diferent on no està gran part del futur de l'educació. Per tant, podem dir que estem en un moment en què hi ha grans acords i grans esperances sobre que aquí tenim un potencial d'aprenentatges i de paradigma diferent, però el gran repte és dir com portem això a l'alumne, com portem això a l'aprenent, com vinculem això a les escoles, com fem que els mestres superin d'alguna manera no només la tradició, sinó la pressió curricular clàssica, no? I puguin incorporar d'una forma realista, d'una forma accessible, d'una forma sistemàtica, diguem que no sigui artesania pura en cada cas, tot això a una dinàmica d'escola real. Tenim uns precedents abans d'això. Tenim a Catalunya els precedents dels projectes educatius de ciutat i de les ciutats educadores, que han tingut, per dir-ho, unes dècades, no? d'un èxit molt gran a l'hora de canviar la cultura i la mirada, però que, com sabeu, molt sovint diguem, han tingut més retòrica que pràctica i han fet d'un primer, diguem, un primer canvi de mirada, us deia, i una primera connectivitat. S'han desenvolupat repositoris, experiències, s'ha valoritzat el que s'estava fent, però encara no han aconseguit saltar la pantalla i esdevenir una alternativa real en els reptes que dèiem, en un canvi real de pràctiques i models d'aprenentatge. En segon lloc, vam tenir els plans d'entorn. Van ser una política molt ambiciosa, molt agosarada, revolucionària en el seu moment, que també va aconseguir canviar una part del codi escolar. Altra cosa és que de la seva ideació, la seva implementació, doncs, es va veure deteriorada i trobem escoles on això va suposar un canvi profund i altres escoles on senzillament doncs, es va aprofitar per fer el de sempre, però canviant altres noms. I després, com sabeu, s'ha desinvertit. No? I ara tenim la iniciativa de l'Aliança per l'Educació a Temps Complert, que compartim amb la Diputació de Barcelona i la Federació de Moviments de l'Educació Pedagògica, que s'inspira en moltes d'aquests models i que aspira a ser doncs, una nova generació, no? de solucions per aquests reptes. Però per qualsevol d'aquestes coses ens calen models i ens calen referents. Des de feia temps seguíem iniciatives, fent prospectiva a tot el món que afrontaven aquest repte i realment la iniciativa que lidera la ponent d'avui és una de les més, o potser la més madura, la més compromesa, la més tangible, no? I al mateix temps també la més agosarada. Molt breument, Sunana Chand, a qui agraïm moltíssim que hagi vingut a compartir el seu coneixement i la seva energia amb nosaltres, és responsable de l'estratègia d'innovació per l'aprenentatge d'aquest moviment, de Remake Learning, des del 2015, que és quan es va traslladar a Pittsburgh per treballar als estats de Pennsilvània i West Virginia. Abans de formar part de Remake Learning, era coordinadora de divulgació comunitària de l'alcalde Melvin Kip Holden de Baton Rouge, a Louisiana. Va dirigir una xarxa de salut pública multisectorial que s'anomenava Iniciativa de la Ciutat Sana de l'alcalde, que treballava per millorar els resultats de salut pels residents d'ingressos baixos de Baton Rouge. No? Per tant, venia d'una matriu clarament comunitària. Sunana també va ser professora de primer i segon grau a Baton Rouge, moment en què va veure de primera mà com la tecnologia podia implicar els seus estudiants, especialment aquells que no responien a les pràctiques docents tradicionals. No? Base comunitària, tecnologia i, finalment, educació, escola i aula. La Sunana es va graduar a la Universitat de Vanderbilt amb un màster d'educació pública en política, perdoneu, i gestió educativa internacional. També té una llicenciatura en ciències polítiques i angleses per a la Universitat d'Illinois a Urbana-Champaign. L'experiència de la Sunana són molts anys en una xarxa molt àmplia, una població que és equiparable a l'àrea metropolitana de Barcelona, perquè vindrien a ser uns 2,5 milions de persones, els que connecta aquesta iniciativa a nivell d'aprenentatge. I avui li hem convidat a fer aquest format de debat que fem últimament, que és una presentació molt breu, seguida d'una entrevista en què la convidem a aprofundir en allò que entenem que són els aspectes claus, diguem, que expliquen l'èxit i la màgia del seu model i aquells que connecten amb les noves necessitats, no? I amb un possible model en el nostre context que és definitiva el que hauríem de, entre tots, en l'estona de debat, aconseguir desentranyar ara. Molt ràpidament us llegiré les claus del model que són el que inspiren la clau amb el que ens hem de mirar la iniciativa. En primer lloc, incidir en la innovació de la formació i desenvolupament del professorat, un tema molt difícil, no? Com sabem, moltes de les iniciatives d'aquí han aconseguit transformar l'extraescolar, però no han aconseguit transformar el codi genètic de l'escola. No han aconseguit interpel·lar, no, ni connectar amb les necessitats reals ni els codis amb el que el professorat actua, apoderar els pares i les famílies per reclamar un aprenentatge innovador, construir el model d'aprenentatge en base a la identitat i trets propis de la regió i orientar-se a la resolució col·laborativa de problemes i reptes reals integrats al context social, fomentar la col·laboració multisectorial i posar mínimes barreres a la implicació de la xarxa, evitar criteris rígids per ser-ne membre, desenvolupar un model alternatiu d'acreditació de l'aprenentatge basat en les digital badges, les microcredencials, posar un èmfasi en mesurar i avaluar l'impacte a la xarxa i haver desenvolupat una guia gratuïta i oberta, el Remake Learning Playbook, per ajudar a descodificar i a compartir aquestes eines d'aprenentatge. Només abans de donar pas a la Sonana, volia també, no són dies qualsevols, la Sonana ho ha pogut veure als nostres carrers, en l'ambient, i especialment avui, juntament amb tantes mobilitzacions com hi ha, doncs no em puc estar de manifestar el meu franc suport i recolzament a dues mobilitzacions que hi ha. Una és, com sabeu, a les 6, fa mitja hora, a la plaça Universitat, la comunitat educativa amb el hashtag Educació contra la repressió, doncs convoca l'Assemblea Groga, no, a manifestar-se, i especialment en concret també els directors, que estan especialment pressionats i assetjats durant aquests dies. I en segon lloc, doncs, fa a les 5:45 la iniciativa Escoles Obertes, que convida la comunitat educativa, pares i mares i a mestres a mantenir les escoles obertes durant aquest cap de setmana perquè no siguin precintades d'una forma pacífica, amb una desobediència, diguem, dialogant i oberta, doncs també estava convocat. Ens hauria agradat estar amb ells, però teníem ja els bitllets i la Sonana convidada i ens ha semblat que tindrem més ocasions d'estar en els dos llocs i que a vegades es poden compatibilitzar debats. Endavant, Sonana. Moltes gràcies per estar aquí.
Thank you. Okay. Bona tarda a tothom. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Sunana Chand, and I am from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Oh, it's not quite up yet. In the meantime, I'd like to thank the Foundation Bofill. Thank you to the Open University of Catalonia. Thank you to this magnificent museum for the space today and for setting everything up so beautifully. It is an absolute pleasure, and I'm thrilled and honored to be here with all of you today. So thank you all as well for being here. As I said, my name is Sunana Chand. I'm strategist for Remake Learning, and I'm from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is on the eastern side of the United States. It's a metropolitan area with about 2.5 million people. And it's about 14,000 square kilometers, so a little bit smaller than Catalonia, but not by too much. And today I'm going to talk to you about Remake Learning and how we in the Pittsburgh region have connected our learning spaces and our learning opportunities in ways that create a web of support and an ecosystem that supports innovative teaching and learning in the Pittsburgh region. But before I do that today, I actually want to take you back. I want to take you to yesterday, and specifically, I want to take you back 100 years ago. So imagine yourself there. It's a time of rapid change. A few short decades bring us the internal combustion engine, the telephone, the light bulb, and more. Suddenly, we're able to make things on a massive scale. Workers are pulling all-nighters on assembly lines, churning out steel and assembling cars. Young people are leaving the farms in droves and coming to the cities to enter into a new kind of work, one in which they're going to be required to do set and specific skills over and over and over again. Make this thing one way, make this thing another way, over and over and over. And this emphasis on efficiency and repetition got put into our schools. We asked learners to do discrete sets of skills. Take biology for an hour and then stop. Take language for an hour and then stop. Take science for an hour and then stop. Over and over and over again. And we got into this habit of listen, memorize, test, repeat. And at least in the United States, and at least for some students, this worked beautifully. In America, it created the world's largest middle class. Well, let me bring you to today. Today we're in another period of profound change. It seems like everywhere we look, these new technologies, from smartphones to artificial intelligence, are completely reshaping, redesigning, and remaking our world. Computers are now in millions of people's pockets. Robots are helping us perform surgery. In Pittsburgh, self-driving cars are an everyday sight. And so we now have to think about how this changes what we expect of our learners as well. Because learners, by and large, are not going to be assembling cars. They're going to be designing the computers that drive them. And they're going to be asked to solve these very complex problems like global climate change and income inequality and food shortages, problems for which, unlike on the assembly line, there are no set standards. They're going to need complex problem-solving skills. They're going to need to know how to collaborate. They're going to need to know how to communicate across cultures, across contexts, communities, across countries. So they're going to need to do all of this as well in a time of increasing income inequality, in a time of segregated schools, in a time when, despite educators' heroic efforts, we're still leaving far too many children behind, particularly students in poverty, students of color, students with disabilities, and others. We as adults have the responsibility to make sure that every single student is able to pursue their passions, pursue their interests, find their purpose, and meet the demands of the modern world. I was a teacher, and I can tell you firsthand that education is not just about creating a future workforce. It's about creating creative, curious, compassionate citizens. It's about creating stronger and more equitable communities. It's about creating a more loving and compassionate world. And we think that in order to do that in 2017 and far beyond, it takes a new, more expanded, and more connected approach to learning. And so we in Pittsburgh have been thinking about this for quite some time. In 2007, we kept hearing the same refrain from educators over and over and over again. And some of you might be thinking this to yourself as well. I'm just not connecting with students like I used to. And every generation tends to complain about their younger ones a little bit. But this seemed different. It seemed as if a seismic shift had taken place in the way that kids were forming identities, interacting with the world around them, interacting with their peers. And it was at almost this exact same time when learning scientists, many of them right in our own backyard, at places like Carnegie Mellon University and the University of Pittsburgh, were starting to find out why. They painted a drastically different picture of the modern learner, a learner that has tools that were once unthinkable to us, even 3 to 5 years ago, at their fingertips. A learner who has access to infinite amount of information in an instant. A learner who is forming and reforming identities on social media constantly with a potentially global audience. So think about it. In the age of the iPhone, what should education look like? How should it happen? What is the role of an educator, and who is an educator? So in 2007, when we started hearing this refrain in Pittsburgh, we started bringing people together to think about this problem, mostly educators at first, over breakfast. So it was really just informal conversations that were fueled by pancakes and coffee. And because this was such an intriguing question to so many people, those breakfasts started to grow. And suddenly they involved gamers, roboticists, higher education professors, technologists, funders, businesses, more nonprofits. And slowly, the momentum started to build. And as our network started to grow, we started to realize that this new approach to learning would take an all-hands effort. Not one organization, not one project, not one program could tackle this giant change in learning that needed to happen. We needed our libraries. We needed our museums. We needed our schools, of course. But we also needed all of these other types of organizations to come together. So in other words, we needed a network. We needed an infrastructure to be able to communicate the things that were going on right in our own region, that were innovative, that were compelling, that were moving things forward. We needed a way to champion best practices and be able to show others what quality looked like right around the corner from them in some instances. We needed a way to catalyze new and innovative programs and projects and made sure that the educators in our network were supported. We needed a way, first and foremost, to convene people and organizations, to bring them together in more structured ways in order to help each other solve these problems. And so what started as an informal network of breakfast meetings turned into an international movement. Now there are over 500 organizations that are part of Remake Learning regionally. And again, these involve museums, libraries, schools, after-school organizations, funders, businesses, technologists, all kinds of different organizations that are coming together and garnering international attention for the work that they're doing in the Pittsburgh region. And they're all working together to create engaging, relevant, and equitable learning experiences for the kids in our region. By engaging, what do I mean? I mean that kids are actively building and constructing knowledge. They are not passive recipients. They're actively participating in the learning process. By relevant, I mean that learning is relevant not only to a student's passions and their interests and their community and their context, but it's also relevant to the demands of a 21st century workforce. And by equitable, we mean that the students that need the most support and resources get the most support and resources. So let me show you what that looks like in practice in Pittsburgh.
When it's hands-on learning, it's something that you want to do.
How do we make Pittsburgh the very best place in the world for children? We're all about empowerment, but empowerment through technology innovation. We work with local service organizations and local students, parents, families, and adults in such a way that our technologies can be authentically useful in them improving their circumstances.
When I go back to school, I'll be able to apply what I've learned here into my classwork. And when I do that, I'll be more prepared looking for a job after I graduate.
The learning and rehearsal of skills, whether it's arithmetic or literacy, becomes so central. What sometimes gets neglected is how do we help children grow on the inside?
It's really about pivoting the conversation from education to learning and harnessing all of the assets in a community to contribute to that overall learning journey a young person takes.
We need to learn a lot throughout our whole life. We should never stop learning.
So that paints the picture for you a little bit. What you saw there were all kinds of different spaces, right? Certainly schools, but museums and libraries and higher education institutions as well. And what you can see in that video is that our partners are from all over, from the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh to our local public television stations to schools in urban, rural, and suburban environments. So now it's not at all uncommon for learning scientists to be embedded in museums, learning what works and helping develop new programs. It's not uncommon for inventors and entrepreneurs to work with teachers to create classroom apps that are most relevant to them and their students. It's not at all uncommon for hip-hop artists to be embedded within out-of-school organizations, creating poetry workshops for kids. And all in the service of engaging, relevant, and equitable learning for our modern generation of kids. And so now we've got this movement in the Pittsburgh region that's garnered attention from people like Forbes and CNN and the World Economic Forum and the Tribeca Disruptive Innovation Awards and more. Now in the greater Pittsburgh region, a kid can walk through any number of Remake Learning's front doors, whether those front doors are attached to museums or libraries or schools or virtual spaces or something else entirely, and they can experience this kind of engaging and relevant learning anywhere that they learn. So I'm going to paint a picture for you of how this looks in practice. Let's imagine a student, and let's call that student Leah. Leah's 5 years old, and she comes from a low-income family in Pittsburgh. And due in large part to the hard and wonderful work of Remake Learning's network partners, it's possible today that her entire educational trajectory could be shaped by the members of the network, both in and out of school. So let's start with Leah when she's in kindergarten. You can see Leah using an app called Message From Me. It's where she takes pictures of what she does in her kindergarten class and records some audio and sends that back to her family members at home in a one-way text communication so that when she gets home, her family members can see what she did at school that day and have a meaningful conversation with her about her learning. That app, called Message From Me, is now in over 100 schools and early learning centers throughout the Pittsburgh region. And it started when two organizations that never would have met had it not been for a Remake Learning Network event, Carnegie Mellon University and an advocacy association called the Pittsburgh Association for the Education of Young Children, these two organizations that are normally in separate silos came together to solve a problem. And now it's created massive change on a great scale in the Pittsburgh region. Now imagine that Leah sends pictures back home, and those pictures are of her building things. She seems to have a knack for it. And so her family goes to her teacher and says, "We see she likes to build things. How can we expand on this skill?" And so her teacher goes to one of the over 100 professional development opportunities that are offered in the Pittsburgh region over the course of the year and learns her skills in engineering so she can apply them to the classroom. And in that professional development, she might also meet someone from a neighborhood makerspace. There are over 100 makerspaces in educational settings in the Pittsburgh region, again, in large part due to the network. And she might say to the family, "You should send Leah to go to one of these after-school programs so she can build upon her skills, build her passions, and continue this trajectory of engineering and building." And as Leah grows, so do the number of opportunities that could support her learning. Perhaps she attends one of Pittsburgh Public Schools' STEAM academies, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. Or perhaps she finds the labs at the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh. This started from a small catalytic grant from the Remake Learning Network to see what would happen if we could put recording equipment and 3D printers and all kinds of other making activities within a library. It's since grown to labs at 5 different library locations, and the libraries have plans to expand it to over 20 libraries in the coming years. So again, small ideas, partners coming together, and then potential for massive change. And so Leah might end up here and record music and continue her love of making and creating as she gets older, both in and out of school. But Remake Learning is not just for educators and kids. It's also for parents, families, community members as well. And that's why we started in 2016 something we call Remake Learning Days, the world's largest open house for the future of learning. In 2016, we asked our network members to host events to showcase what the future of learning looked like in their learning space. Over 250 events were hosted over the course of 1 week in 2016 in May. And over 30,000 people attended those events, parents, family members, kids, teachers, to experience what the future of learning looks like. And all of these little dots are museums and libraries and schools that were hosting events in 2016. At the launch event in 2016, over 100 organizations made commitments to learning innovation in our region that totaled $25 million in investment. This year, in 2017, there were over 350 events over the course of 12 days, and another 30,000 parents and families came out to experience the future of learning. And it's important that these events happen not just in the city center, but in suburban communities and in far rural communities as well, because we need to account for all different kinds of variances in location and in students, because we know that what might work in one context might not work in another. And that's also what's so great about a networked approach, is that hopefully, when you're able to see the entire region and all of the organizations that are participating, you can see where there's a concentration of activity and where more activity needs to happen. You can see where there are inequities in the system and work your very hardest to fill those gaps. For instance, for Remake Learning Days, we focused our attention on 6 communities that, although they're full of amazing educators and there are really amazing learning opportunities there, these communities have struggled with economic disinvestment, with poverty, and with systemic oppression. And we focused attention on those areas. We concentrated funding, we worked with community partners, we made sure that there were lots of events happening in those areas to showcase the great work of those communities, and we focused positive marketing attention and specific marketing campaigns for each. And this is important for lots of reasons, but not least of which is that a network like Remake Learning is at its best when it's most diverse and inclusive. You never know who's going to spark the next great idea, so we need to make sure that there are as many people around the table as possible. And innovation only happens when people who never would have met come together and think of something new. And so it's very important to us that we cultivate a diverse and inclusive network. And so in that way, I'm hoping to explain to you a little bit as I end my presentation about how we created our network, how we sustain our network. And in the service of that, I hope to grow ours with all of you, but I also hope that we can start to think about how you can start a network and how that might grow for you as well. So here's my first tip, build on your strengths. What makes your region unique? What makes your city unique? What about its identity, its history, its culture, its institutions gives it unique ability and strength to serve its children in innovative ways? I'll give you an example in Pittsburgh. We have a long history of making things and reinventing ourselves. We're an old steel town that is now a hub for technology, for advanced manufacturing, and for the arts. And that well positions our region to be able to advance STEAM learning, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, and gives us plenty of partners to work with who can come together to accelerate this work. And that leads me to my next point. Encourage cross-sector collaboration. As I said before, the best new innovations happen when people who never would have met come together. And that's why the network is full of not only educators, but technologists, makers, artists, local politicians, philanthropists, all kinds of business leaders as well, all coming together to think about the future of learning, which is why you'll see drones flying outside classroom doors. It's why you see local politicians extolling the virtues of Remake Learning and its impact on the local economy. It's why you see musicians and artists and learning scientists working together all the time. That's something that we encourage over and over and over again. You also need to equip your educators to innovate. You need to give them all the support and resources that you can to make sure that they are ready to think about learning in sometimes drastically different ways. And so for us, that means building a network of professional development that's hosted by all kinds of different people in all kinds of geographic areas that give teachers the ability to teach each other, to work in peer-to-peer ways, and to practice modern pedagogies like project-based learning, deeper learning, STEAM learning, maker learning, and more. You also need to meet people where they are. Meet people where they are on the road to innovation. You can't teach a child or help them to navigate designing and printing something on a 3D printer if you yourself are struggling with that and don't have the skills. So how do we meet educators where they are in their expertise and their pathway to innovation? But how do we also meet them where they are geographically? How do we make sure that teachers don't have to drive an hour and a half to get to an innovative professional development opportunity? We know that teachers don't have a lot of time. So how do we make this process as easy as possible for educators that work so hard day in and day out and are spending as much time as they can in service of their kids and their families? Be open and inclusive. So again, I talked about how important it is for networks to be diverse and inclusive. The best ideas are when diverse sets of people come together. And so that's how we make it really easy to join the network. You just go onto the network at remakelearning.org, fill out a brief form that takes maybe 10 minutes, and commit to network values, things like creativity, collaboration, compassion, and positivity. And you can be a member of the network and start to connect with other people as well. Be audacious. Be bold. We don't have time to wait. This system of listen, memorize, test, repeat is failing too many students. So how do we make sure that we're getting out there and doing bold things and not being afraid of change or being afraid of risk? How are we making sure that the crazy ideas get a chance to sprout and grow into something amazing over the course of your entire community? And finally, and most importantly, keep learners at the center of your work. Listen to them, love them, trust them. We are all in service of our young people, ultimately. And so we need to make sure that they are supported in their creativity and in their development as caring, compassionate citizens, again, who are ready for the demands of the modern world. We have a television show in the United States called Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. It was a television show that ran for many decades, and it was filmed in Pittsburgh. Fred Rogers, the main person, was from Pittsburgh. He used the innovative technology of his day, television, to transform the way that we did social-emotional learning in the United States. And one of the things that he said was, one of the greatest dignities of humankind is that each successive generation invests in the welfare of each new generation. So I want to thank you. I want to thank you for being here, but I also want to thank you for investing in the welfare of this new generation that is so different from generations prior. And I want to thank you for thinking about how you can work together and really collaborate to take on this massive challenge of changing learning so that we meet the needs of today's kids and meet them where they are. So again, thank you to the Foundation. Thank you to the Open University. Thank you on behalf of Remake Learning. It's been an honor to be here with you, and I'm looking forward to your questions. Thanks.
Thanks. Thanks so much, Susana Gain. Bé, li hem demanat una introducció perquè per poder visualitzar quin és el marc de l'experiència, quines són les idees força, quina és la geometria, però a l'entrevista ens plantejàvem que ens ajudés a entendre els reptes, aquelles coses més difícils, aquelles coses que sense les quals en realitat aquest conjunt, no, aquesta enginyeria que ens ha presentat no deixa de ser un model en el que ens costa molt imaginar com mobilitzar els actors, com connectar-ho amb les seves necessitats reals, com començar a construir pedra a pedra, no, aquesta iniciativa que ja porta molts anys. De manera que li hem preparat unes preguntes en què ens ajudi d'una forma compromesa i realista a poder entendre com ho van fer ells i a poder potser fer una analogia, imaginar-nos com ho faríem nosaltres en el nostre context. So, en primer lloc, ens interessa els principis, no? Quan veus una casa construïda, un edifici construït, doncs tot és molt coherent, no? Però com és l'arrencada, com és l'espurna que comença aquesta iniciativa? La pregunta és com es va aconseguir passar d'un grup informal que es reunia per esmorzar a esdevenir una gran xarxa de reconeixement internacional? Què va ser necessari per estimular el creixement i l'impacte de la xarxa d'educadors, d'experts i d'entitats fins a aconseguir crear aquest autèntic ecosistema local, no? A partir d'aquell marc que van dissenyar? De les intuïcions a un model.
Sure. So, whenever I give presentations like this, it seems like this, as you said very beautifully, it seems like this built house, and it's all finished, and it looks beautiful, and people say, I can never build that. That's too much. And what I always say was, remember that we started in a room just like this, with even fewer people, actually, all educators who were thinking about the future of learning and who were trying to figure out how to come together and make this work. And so I would say the first thing to do is really to continue to do this, to come together, to talk, to bring as many partners to the room as possible, and make sure that at every convening, you're also looking at who's not at the table, who's not in the room, who should be here that's not here, and how do we make sure that they're here the next time? And so that is a wonderful place to start, and you're already there. In Pittsburgh, and around 2010, 2011, so the network was already 3 or 4 years old of doing these kind of informal conversations, we decided we needed a lot more infrastructure. And that's when the Sprout Fund, which was a local nonprofit in Pittsburgh, stepped in. A few foundation partners stepped in to support the work. This organization was instrumental in beginning Remake Learning. They founded all of the communication strategy. They founded the brand, which was hugely important. Having a brand, an umbrella for people to identify with that is neutral, that is positive, is a huge step that we took forward in 2010 and 11. And I always say it's really important to get that as a next step once you're having these informal conversations. They made sure that there was catalytic funding of between $5,000 and $10,000 so that folks, educators, technologists, people in the network could start testing out their ideas in very small ways so that they could grow. They also started doing a lot of the larger convenings under the umbrella of this new brand website and social media and everything that goes with that. So putting that infrastructure in place was hugely important. And then as Remake Learning continued to grow and continued to thrive, in 2014, we put in place something called the Remake Learning Council, which is a council of about 40 multi-sector CEOs, executives, from our county executive in Allegheny County, to heads of major education philanthropies, to the head of the Carnegie Libraries, the head of the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh, and others, CEOs of businesses as well, which is important, and others to come together and set symbolic and strategic strategy to say, yes, this is an organic network. Yes, we're doing lots of things. But what are we missing as a region? How can we be more strategic about the things that we're doing to really push the network forward? How do we not just rest but continue to push? And so in 2017, now we have Remake Learning Days, which was an initiative, strategic direction out of the Remake Learning Council. We just reformed our mission and vision, and so we're continuing to think about how do we as a network continue to innovate as we grow forward. We're continuing to grow ourselves. And so you're starting in exactly the right place, in exactly the right ways, and hopefully it won't take you as long either, because now there are so many examples, not just in Pittsburgh, but across the United States and across the country, of regions and cities that have come together to do this work.
És molt interessant pensar que, de fet, el pressupost i l'equip que porta Remake Learning és un equip petit amb un pressupost petit. És a dir, el seu potencial, bàsicament, és entendre aquesta dimensió de com actives el lideratge, com connectes amb la disposició de molts actors a contribuir, com, per tant, mobilitzes recursos ja existents i no tant desenvolupes, no, diguem, un gran pressupost o una gran estructura nova. No? Entendre la lògica, no, de les necessitats i de les voluntats de cadascun dels actors i com els fas confluir és el secret, sembla, d'aquesta fase. Després, l'altre gran tema. Abans ja feia la reflexió. Està ple d'iniciatives que intenten el mateix, al nostre país i altres llocs, que sembla que aconsegueixen desenvolupar el potencial dels agents comunitaris, dels que estan fora de l'escola, però molt sovint l'escola no es dona per interpel·lada. L'escola i el mestre, no, amb la seva tradició tan centrada a vegades en l'aula i el currículum, no, amb la pressió de resultats amb el que es troba, no, amb les ràtios que ha de manegar, i amb tot organitzat, anem a dir, per superar, no, un sistema tan centrat en el currículum clàssic, moltes vegades no té ni la tradició cultural de pensar en això, ni l'oportunitat, el temps o la facilitat de saber com, no, com canviar-ho. En definitiva, per tant, quins aspectes de la formació i desenvolupament del professorat es van transformar per treballar en un model eficient d'aprenentatge connectat? Perquè aquesta vegada l'escola fos part activa, líder i també beneficiària, no?, de tot aquest aprenentatge, i no pas aquell actor més passiu o més lateral.
So that's also a great question. And at first we started with folks who were ready. So we started with superintendents who were already thinking in forward ways, and said, how do we support you in ways that can really accelerate your work? And we started to implement, so the first thing that we did in, very early on in the network was that we supported a lot of technology enhancements in any way that we could, right? So maker spaces, 3D printers, iPads, computers, things that would increase the digital ability of schools. And what we started to realize was, as a network, as a region, educators were getting all these tools and they were saying, I have no idea what to do with this. We weren't meeting educators where they were, right? And so the strategy completely changed from a network perspective, and we started to really encourage and showcase professional learning and all the places in which professional learning happens. So at this point, right now, I run a group, a working group of 60 professional development providers in the region. And they are school districts themselves that host professional learning for other school districts that's innovative and peer-to-peer and focused on modern pedagogies like computer science and project-based learning and maker learning and things like that. But there are also higher education institutions that host professional learning. There are traditional professional development providers that have really stretched their ability to teach in innovative and compelling ways and created makerspaces for teachers in particular so that they have a dedicated space to tinker and play and be curious and take risks. We have a lot of professional development providers that are even ed tech companies that provide free professional development in the use of their products throughout the region. And so we bring all these folks together from different sectors and say, how are you serving educators? Are we supporting educators enough? Are we supporting all educators? Are there gaps? And so we have put a strong emphasis on professional learning in our region to make sure that teachers feel comfortable with, you know, with innovation, and also that their administrators, their leadership level, also feels comfortable with it. Because a teacher can do all the innovation that they want in a school, but without a supportive administration, that can fizzle pretty quickly, and educators can become discouraged. So then how do you change the culture of a region that can then spill over and change the culture of a school and vice versa as well? How does the culture of a school impact other schools and spill out into the culture of a region? And so so there are lots of ways that we support school districts specifically. I would also say that we make sure that professional learning includes both in and out of school educators. In-school educators have a lot to learn from each other, but they also have a lot to learn from out-of-school educators, museum educators, library educators, after-school program educators that often teach in very different ways that could be applicable to this type of innovative learning. And thirdly, I'll say to the piece about standardized tests and kind of traditional forms of learning and assessment, there's a growing body of research around project-based learning, interdisciplinary learning, at least not having a negative effect on test scores and assessment, and in some cases having really good positive effects, particularly on disadvantaged populations. And so we actually, in Pittsburgh and across the United States, are trying to not only conduct more of those studies so that there's a larger evidence base, but also to make sure that we're creating meta-analyses of these studies and communicating them as widely as possible so that there is less of this fear of changing the traditional systems just because assessments haven't caught up to the new ways that teachers, educators, in and out of school are thinking about learning.
Molt bé. Realment, aquest és un gran tema. És un dels grans secrets de l'èxit o el fracàs. Aquesta experiència en concret ens interessa molt perquè és brillant i molt efectiva, però cap experiència surt del no-res. És a dir, hi ha hagut experiències similars abans que han estat fallides, no? De les que s'han après dels errors o que senzillament no han aconseguit connectar amb els mestres, amb la comunitat, o no han aconseguit crear una xarxa. No? Diguem, tota experiència té una història a darrere en què han après d'altres llocs on a vegades és una història d'assaig-error no sempre reeixida. I en concret ens interessa molt com s'implementa a la pràctica aquesta idea de les trajectòries individuals i personalitzades d'aprenentatge centrades en motivacions i interessos de l'alumne. Allò que us deia abans, que és la base o la idea amb força més potent de l'aprenentatge personalitzat. És una idea, anem a dir, poderosa, no? En el sentit de dir, quan els alumnes aprenen i segueixen trajectòries d'educació basades en les seves motivacions, sabem que aquests interessos, diguem, són molt més poderosos a l'hora de generar aprenentatge i coneixement, però el salt de la teoria a la pràctica, a fer-ho efectiu, doncs gairebé sempre és abismal. Com heu abordat aquest repte?
Yeah. So different organizations are doing this in completely different ways. There's a organization called Youth Leading Change in the Pittsburgh region that's part of the Remake Learning Network that brings together youth from, I think, 6 different individual districts in the Pittsburgh region and brings them together to solve large community and societal questions, right? They're really critically examining the political structures, the economic structures, the social structures within which they live. They're critically examining it, they're starting to deconstruct those systems, and then they're starting to propose new solutions for an entirely new, different, more equitable world. And so that's a great example of remake learning in practice as well, right? We want students to be actively engaged in their learning, and we want to trust students to be able to do that. I have found in this work that it's really hard for adults to trust students. And you can't customize learning to students. You can't let them really be active and explore and engage in interdisciplinary and active ways unless you trust them to be able to do that. And so that's a big step. And again, that's something that we talk about both in our mission and vision of the network, but also we hope that our network partners are promoting this idea when they're delivering professional learning, for instance. Other schools have done things like 3D printing design challenges. They have done community projects and design challenges. I think about the Steel Valley School District in Pittsburgh, right outside of Pittsburgh, actually, that created an innovation zone that was in an old wrestling room, and they transformed it into this incredible space. And they're actually working with community partners in this innovation space, and the youth are leading an economic development change in their small town outside of Pittsburgh and really taking that on themselves. And so when we talk about personalization and customization, sometimes people get this image in their mind of a student sitting in front of a computer, and the computer decides what they're going to learn at exactly the right level, and it's one teacher and 60 kids, and there's no engagement. But that's not what we're talking about in Pittsburgh. We're talking about saying, what do you care about to learners? What problems do you want to solve? And how can we help you get there with all the tools that are available, with all the knowledge that we have as educators, and with all the knowledge that you have as a learner and all the knowledge you have at your fingertips? I mean, with that, technology is obviously really important, but it can be used in lots of different ways. And so we like to think in the Pittsburgh region of technology as a tool and not an end in itself. And then I will also say that a way to get to customization, so when I was a teacher, I have these horrible memories of taking attendance by hand, and I have these memories of collecting exit tickets at the end of every day and entering them into an Excel spreadsheet for hours to try and determine where my students were at different levels in math and reading. And we're getting to the point now where artificial intelligence and other technologies can actually allow for greater efficiencies in these bureaucratic tasks. So teachers don't necessarily have to spend hours diagnosing their students and doing these kinds of by-hand assessments. They don't necessarily have to take a lot of time doing attendance themselves and can find more efficient processes via technology to try and figure out where their students are in the learning process. And so that opens up potentially a lot of time that teachers can really pay attention to the needs, interests, and levels of their students and be able to customize and personalize learning in a way that's much more meaningful to every student. And so I think that time to build relationships and deep and meaningful relationships with students and their families and how technology might allow for that is also going to be incredibly important in this customizing learning and giving youth more agency and opportunity to be able to activate their own learning as well.
Doncs, i continuem per aquí. Diem, a banda del que ens has dit, què més aporta la digitalització, la tecnologia en el vostre model? I de les experiències que coneixes, què seria un error tecnològic en el vostre cas? No? Diguem, què s'ha d'evitar en clau digital per un model com aquest? I on estan els altres potencials, a part del que ens estaves explicant ara mateix?
Okay, so what are the potential positive uses of technology, and what are the kind of mistakes or mistakes people make with technology? Well, I'll start with the mistakes, I guess. I think the mistakes are Especially, so there are lots of studies, especially with younger kids, that show that you can't just hand them a piece of technology and let them go. You need to be able to, as an adult, sit side by side with that student using that iPad and be able to guide them through the process and build relationships as you're using technology. It's far too easy in this day and age to just sit students in front of the computer and let them go. And so we, again, in the Remake Learning Network, are really trying to encourage this idea that it's not about the shiny object. It's not about these awesome tools and technologies in themselves, in and of themselves. I think a mistake that we make is we say, oh, this thing is really cool. Let's put on this virtual headset and it's going to be awesome. But what learning is actually coming from that necessarily? Now, learning can come from that. And so, you know, some positives about technology. I think about a project at Propel Schools in Pittsburgh, working with some out-of-school partners as well. And they had students actually filming, audio recording, and then showcasing at different community events virtual reality tours of poverty in their region, right? Again, student-created, multidisciplinary, use of technology that was guided by an educator in very thoughtful and intentional ways. And so that experience is so completely different from the experience of just, here's a roller coaster on a virtual reality headset, isn't this cool? And so, again, technology does not replace the educator. Technology enhances the experience. Technology can absolutely make learning more engaging for kids, especially kids that have grown up with an iPhone in their hand, right? We need technology to engage with today's kids, for sure. But we cannot fall into the trap of saying that technology is it, and it's enough to just give kids technology and let them go. Educators are needed to support students in that process, and educators are needed, again, in a network scenario to help each other to figure out the best ways to be able to do that.
Molt bé. Aprofito un moment per proposar-vos, d'aquí poc, quan acabem l'entrevista, farem un debat entre tots. Aquells qui esteu a la sala el podreu fer amb micròfon, els que esteu des de casa, des de la feina, si tuitegeu les preguntes amb el hashtag debatsdeducació, les capturarem i encara que no estigueu aquí serà com si fóssiu. I també les traslladarem a la convidada. Per tant, enseneu ja tots el cervell, no, diguem, a l'hora de plantejar preguntes concretes. Sobre les famílies. No? Les famílies juguen un paper paradoxal, perquè per una banda inverteixen més diners que mai i més rellevància que mai en algunes extraescolars, que sovint per elles són més importants en el seu diari gairebé que a l'escola, no? Doncs a vegades música, extraescolars de matemàtiques, artístiques, o d'alemany o de xinès. Però per l'altra, tenim altres famílies que no valoren això, o les mateixes famílies, en el fons, la seva actitud front a l'escola, a l'hora de reconèixer aquestes coses, no deixa de ser de dir, bé, hi ha una cosa important, que són els aprenentatges lectius clàssics, no? Les matemàtiques, la llengua, i les ciències i les notes de sempre, i tot l'altre és com de més a més. No? Per tant, les famílies, fins a cert punt, en algun cas poden ser resistents a un canvi de paradigma com aquest. Quin rol, diguem, com heu aconseguit que les famílies reclamin un aprenentatge reconegut com a més ample i com a més innovador, en comptes de ser resistents a la seva valorització?
I'll say first that classical studies like math and language are still incredibly important. And we don't say, you don't need any of those academic skills. You're good, kids. I think what we think about is, how do we teach math? How do we teach literacy? How do we teach science? How do we teach these very hard, hard skills, I suppose, in ways that are, again, engaging, relevant, and equitable, right? There's no one way to teach a child to learn how to read. I know that from being a first grade teacher. I wish that I had more than one way when I was a first grade teacher to teach my kids how to read, because not all of my kids picked up a book and read in the way that the textbook told me that they would. Not all kids were engaged by that, right? It wasn't relevant to all kids. Not all kids learn math in the same way. How do we as educators be able to personalize that experience and teach kids academic skills? Of course, also teach them complex problem solving, collaboration, communication, all of those things as well. But there is a lot of resistance sometimes from parents and families because, again, I talked about in the beginning of my presentation how we've had the system of education for hundreds of years now. We have had, you know, all of us, I think, even though I grew up in the United States, many of you grew up here, we probably all have a similar conception of what being in school looks like, what it feels like. The experience of a teacher standing in front of a class and giving us a lesson is something that all of us kind of know what that is. And so as education starts to change and we start to think about education not only in school differently, but think about education as existing out of school as well, right? Think about the school building is not the only place where kids learn. That's even in itself a dramatic shift. Is something that parents sometimes struggle with. And so that's actually why we started Remic Learning Days, because what we really wanted to do was have a massive marketing campaign to parents and families to get them to come out and experience a very different type of learning themselves and with their children, to see, wow, when I'm doing this hands-on coding or robotics project, and the educators they're supporting, but it's a very different type of environment. This is really hard. And I'm actually learning in a way that's very different from the way I used to learn, but I'm learning more. And I can see my student is so engaged, and my student is learning and interested. And there's this really interesting change that happens in parents and families when they themselves experience the change. Because we can talk about the change all we want. We can write as many reports as we want. We can talk about it all we want. But until we actually experience what this type of different type of learning looks like, feels like, it's really hard to actually understand why it's necessary and why parents could or should start advocating for this type of learning in their own school. So what we're really trying to do as well with Remic Learning Days is build demand among parents and families for this type of learning so that we're not the only people as practitioners in the network advocating for it, so that families are advocating for it. Families in all different kinds of neighborhoods, again, suburban, urban, and rural, and making sure that everyone has a chance to experience it. And so that's one way that we've done it, is we've just helped our network partners with that community engagement and family engagement piece so that their parents and their constituencies could really experience the change.
Un altre dels temes clau és, a banda de voler incrementar la quantitat, la qualitat o l'accessibilitat de les experiències d'aprenentatge que gaudeixen els nois i les noies, de fet, la vostra iniciativa bàsicament es proposa resoldre un repte, que és que aquestes experiències d'aprenentatge, aquests aprenentatges siguin identificables, no? Siguin coherents, no? És a dir, la suma d'experiències no tenen per què ser un aprenentatge i la suma d'aprenentatges no tenen per què donar lloc a un projecte educatiu o a una educació del noi, no? Cal més que això. Quin rol juguen aquí les digital badges o les microcredencials per validar aquest aprenentatge? Diguem, quina és la seva rellevància? Què aporten? Com es donen?
Of what's the added value of digital badges?
And how they work.
Or how they work, right. So we've been experimenting with alternative forms of assessment for a long time in Pittsburgh. Certainly digital badges, but also things like digital portfolios as well, micro-credentials, all kinds of different things. And the reason for that is that the workforce was saying we need people entering the workforce who they don't necessarily need to know the skills. We can teach them the skills. We can teach them how to code in Java, for instance, but we can't teach them how to be collaborators, how to communicate, how to solve complex problems and really work together. And so, you know, educators, how do you prepare students to do that and then enter the workforce? And so, you know, we were thinking, well, we're doing that at the K-12 level. Remic Learning is 10 years old, and we've really been trying as educators to instill these different values in our children, but we have no way to show it. And so how could alternative forms of assessment, like digital badges, certify that, yes, I worked with peers over the course of the year to develop this project at my library or at my museum or at my school, And how do I actually show that I did that in really relevant ways that mean something, not only to their different learning environments, but also to the workforce as well. And so we experimented for a long time with digital badges, and digital badging was implemented, again, across all different types of network partners. Certainly, actually, libraries are still using digital badges right now to do things. They're actually not digital anymore because the technology wasn't quite there, which is one of the issues we've had with digital badging, is just that sometimes the technology isn't quite there to get us in a place where our network partners can easily work with it, but we're hoping it's getting there very soon. But they'll use badging to unlock a device. So if a student wants to check out a very expensive or complex camera, they have to go through a series of learning opportunities, earn a badge, and then they're able to rent those cameras from the library. And so hundreds of kids have earned this badge because they want to rent the camera, and so there's some sort of incentive there. I know that in Austin, Texas, they're experimenting with digital badging, and in their case, they're actually, students can unlock digital badges through sets of experiences and actually unlock apprenticeship and internship opportunities that way. And so there are all kinds of really great examples across the United States right now of using digital portfolios and digital badges to certify skills that are very difficult to quantify, which we're kind of continuing to work on. My hope for digital badging in the future is that, in a very practical example, if a student learns basic coding on Scratch Junior at a library, that student can get a digital badge that is recognized at their school so that when they go to school in their coding class, they don't have to retake Scratch Junior and be bored for a few weeks. They can go on to the next level, right? And then they can earn a digital badge on that next level of coding at their school. And then the school might say, listen, you're ready for Python. And the place that can teach you Python is this makerspace down the street from your house, so go there. The makerspace recognizes the digital badge from the school. The student then goes on and continues on their learning journey and their pathway somewhere else. That creates a connected learning environment, and it reduces duplication for that student, so it makes learning more engaging and relevant for that student. And it also reduces funding duplication in the system. It creates efficiencies in the system that we never had before. And it just accelerates these learning pathways for kids so that when they're learning in and out of school, that learning is connected, it's streamlined, and it all works together. And then hopefully, once they've earned the highest badge that they can earn in coding, then they can go to a job, even if they've only graduated from high school, and say, I know how to do this. Here are all my certifications. Here's my pathway. I am completely certified in being able to do this job, and I might not have the technical certificate that's traditional that you normally look for, but I can do this work. And so it also unlocks possibilities for kids that have often been shut out of, you know, traditional systems of employment, traditional systems of economic mobility that disadvantage and oppress some students and some populations. And so it creates those opportunities too for students that may not have otherwise had those opportunities. So that would be my vision for digital badging. Right now, we're still a little ways off, but we're still working on getting to something like that.
Great. Al principi ens deia, vam fer un gran esforç en branding, en comunicació, no? Diguem, en crear com una marca comuna en què tota l'oferta, tant escolar com comunitària, pogués compartir aquella identitat, es pogués identificar, és igual si un, per dir-ho així, era un esplai o un agrupament escolta, un altre centre era una escola de programació o de llengües, no? Diguem, que de cara a les famílies, d'alguna manera l'ecosistema fos visible, tingués aquest nexe en comú, malgrat la singularitat i la identitat totalment diferenciada de cada un dels recursos. Per això, fer visible allò heterogeni, allò singular, i fer visible allò invisible és una estratègia molt important. No? Heu invertit molt en aquest esdeveniment presencial, el Remake Learning Days, no? Per amplificar el potencial. Heu invertit molt també en el playbook, no? En documentar, recollir en una guia, no? A l'accés de les famílies tot el que hi ha en un llenguatge comú i també amb unes credencials comunes. Explica'ns molt breument, no? Diguem, quina és la importància d'aquesta part visible, no? D'aquesta part identificativa i comuna, i què recomanes en relació a aquests recursos?
Yeah. Sure. Marketing and branding is incredibly important. Digital Promise, I know, spoke here perhaps a year ago. They lead an effort called Education Innovation Clusters, where they create sets of toolkits for different regions and cities to be able to actually set up ecosystems for learning, like Remake Learning, in their own places. And one of the things that they say that I think is critical is, who answers the phone? So when someone wants to get in touch with someone else in the network, what's the phone number? What's the website? Where does someone go to actually interact with this network? And I think when networks start, they're often quite informal. They're often just kind of people coming together, thinking about, we should do this. Here, let's pull in some more people. I know someone else you should talk to. Let's bring this together. But where I've seen networks fail is where they never get to the point of solidifying that brand, that identity. As you say, I think, really well, making the invisible visible. That was a huge step in creating a more stable infrastructure for Remake Learning to move forward. And so I think also that nonprofits, by and large, don't, and through no fault of their own, because this is often a funding barrier as well, but don't have the expertise and also don't have the time or the money to be able to market what they do or really to be able to communicate what they do to a larger audience. And so that's also why marketing on a network side is so important, because a huge part of what we do is we tell the story of our network members. We say, look at this school over here doing this amazing thing. Look at this out-of-school program. Let's write a blog about them. They are doing some incredible work. Look at this educator at this library. Oh, my goodness, we have to tell the story of this person. So we write blogs. We're on social media. Find us at Remake Learning on Twitter and on Facebook. We go to places like this and talk about all the wonderful people doing wonderful work in the network. And that serves the purpose locally of helping people connect and helping people get in touch with one another and helping people spark new ideas. But it also helps nationally. I mean, we've gotten some national funders to come to Pittsburgh and contribute to our regional work because we've been able to tell the story. And so you talked about the playbook. The playbook is online at remakelearning.com/playbook. You can actually order a copy for free online if you want a hard copy, but the whole thing is online. And what we did there was we said, here are the plays that we use to start the network in Pittsburgh. So we talk about how you can communicate your work. And I mean, what are the discrete things that you can do, and how do you make it happen? How do you convene people? What are the different types of events, large and small, you can do? How do you champion the work? What are the strategies that you can use for that? And so it's literally a book of strategies. We open source the way that we did our network. We think everyone should have a network like this, and everyone can. And so the playbook just helps people not from Pittsburgh start and expand their networks. And also in the playbook, there's lots of case studies. Case studies of museums and of libraries and of schools and other spaces that have collaborated with others in the network and created some really innovative experiences. And so, again, you know, marketing, telling the story is so important in building a network and creating that connective tissue between organizations, but also creating an incredible energy and movement both within the region and then outside, you know, nationally and internationally as well.
Molt bé. I com s'avalua l'impacte d'aquesta xarxa? És a dir, com busqueu indicadors o sistemes d'avaluació de quin és l'abast, de quin és l'impacte, de quina és la qualitat?
So, some of you in your hands, and I don't know, there probably was not enough for everybody, but there's a publication called Learning Together. It's purple and square. Some of you might have one. We actually just published that, and it is a 10-year impact report. So it's very quantitative in nature, also some qualitative stories as well. But it talks about, in numbers, kind of what has been the impact of Remake Learning over 10 years. And we have lots of outcome measures across our network. So 170 makerspaces, as I talked about, hundreds of professional development opportunities, millions of dollars invested, thousands of families showing up for Remake Learning Days, thousands of educators participating in professional development opportunities, all kinds of measures like that that show the scale and the growth of the network itself. When we talk about outcome measures, it's a little bit more difficult. Not only more difficult because we're a network of over 500 organizations. So gathering student outcome data is very difficult across all those places. But also the fact that Remake Learning really focuses on and cares about things like critical problem solving and collaboration and communication. And there's no standard instrument that's practitioner friendly that measure those things across different domains. So it's very difficult to measure those things at all. And it's at this point, we're trying to figure out a way to measure those things across different learning settings. So if you're at a museum or at a school or at a library, what are the student outcomes in those very hard to measure competencies, and how do we figure that out? And so again, digital badges is a way that we've tried to do that as well. We do a lot of qualitative analysis. So we do a lot of case studies. We work with folks like the University of Pittsburgh and Carnegie Mellon University to think about what are the outcomes for students that we can at least see in qualitative studies across our region. For instance, we just completed a research study about equity and educational innovation in rural communities and how we can spur more education innovation in our rural and agricultural communities, interviewing lots of people and lots of different stakeholders from those communities in order to do that. And so we do have an emphasis on research. We do make sure that we're doing as much as we can to learn from the learning sciences and to bring that into our work. But we still have a long road to go in measuring student outcomes as they relate to collaboration and problem solving and creativity across different learning environments and being able to bring that together into a holistic picture.